Welcome back to the Hawks Talk Podcast. This is your source for everything about the Upper Valley Nighthawks and the NECBL. This is Season 3, Episode 11, Week 1 Review. I'm your host, Phoebe Winters, joined by co-hosts Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell. Caitlin, Greg, how are you doing?
I'll check with you when I wake up. Let's put it that way, but otherwise fine.
Doing pretty good. Excited to be here, have a full week under our belts now, so things are starting to fall into place. All the issues we're having last week that we talked about with the broadcast have been resolved. So that's very exciting. Going into now the home opener tonight.
Yeah. And we also have two special guests on the podcast today. You guys are actually our first official in-person guests to come on the Hawks Talk podcast. We've got the founder and president of the Nighthawks, Noah Crane, and then Nighthawks hitting coach, Adarius Meyer. Welcome to the podcast, guys. How are you feeling?
I feel great. Appreciate y'all for having me.
Of course. Excited to get started. Glad to be the first in studio guest.
Exactly.
I haven't been on yet. Adarius has been on staff for about a couple of weeks, and he gets an invite. It took a long time for me to show up.
So, Noah, you founded the Nighthawks back in 2016. Can you kind of walk us through that process of building the team and what that was like?
Yeah, I had a leg up because prior to this team, I'd started a team over in Laconia, New Hampshire, so the Laconia Muskrats, which sadly don't exist anymore. So back in 2010, launched that team. So I kind of knew the routine. And the reality is I would have loved to have started here from the beginning, but there just wasn't a facility. The Maxfield Sports Complex hadn't been built yet. I looked at Lebanon High School, and it's just not workable from a geography standpoint and not having much by way of infrastructure. And so it wasn't until Maxfield was built that I thought, oh, okay, this might be a possibility here. I mean, this is my home community. I was driving an hour and 15 minutes one way to Laconia every day, and that got old very fast. So to be able to have something right here in our backyard was ideal. And I knew that this community would support an effort, an organization like this, and they have. And we're now almost a decade in, and it's been getting better every year, and I feel like we really cemented ourselves as the summer experience for the Upper Valley.
And you mentioned you had a team before this. Why was building a summer collegiate team in Upper Valley or just in general in this area so important to you?
It's just a way to give back and a way to keep my hand in baseball, and having played and having coached, I do really love the game, but I also love this area. I love people, and you can do both of those things with an organization like this. It's short and sweet. We're only around for really 2 months, so it's manageable from a schedule as far as my family is concerned, but it's also a way to do something nice for the community and give back in a tangible way to make something that people are get excited about and people spend their summers doing, and it gives Greg's wife something to do in the summer.
That is true, aside from watching me, fall asleep in the middle of the day.
Now, in terms of being the president, what are some of the day-to-day tasks? What are you doing, on a day-to-day basis for the team?
I think what I enjoy most is that it changes every day. Mm-hmm. I'm not someone who's wired to be able to sit at a desk and just do the same thing. I would really struggle. As much as my wife would like me to do that, I'm not wired that way at all. And so each day, something is different. And one day, I'm making extra keys so that we have keys to get into doors, or doing field work, or hanging banners, or selling hot dogs, or ripping tickets, or putting a roster together, talking to college coaches. There's a lot that goes into running a team like this. Nothing that's overly technical or overly difficult, but there's just a lot of moving pieces, and every day there's something different. And I enjoy that aspect. It's never boring. Sometimes it's stressful, but it's always exciting and it's always enjoyable. And I get to spend a lot of my time with wonderful people. I mean, the folks in this room, the folks in our community, our sponsors, our host families, our coaches, our players. It's just really neat. I've been able to meet and forge relationships with a lot of wonderful people.
Now, Adarius, you were part of the 2022 and the 2023 Nighthawks. Can you tell us a little bit about your playing experience with the Nighthawks?
Yeah, I had a lot of fun playing with the Nighthawks. 2022, I didn't have a summer ball team to play for. I was kind of just sitting at home and doing my own thing. And then our pitching coach hit me up one day and asked me if I wanted to go play. And I was like, yeah. He was like, yeah. The only thing is, where you're going is kind of far away. And I was like, where is he? He was like, Vermont. And I was like, I guess I'll go play. I had no idea how I was going to end up getting here, but my mom ended up riding up here with me the first time. And then guess I played pretty good for them in those 10 games that I played that year, and then they invited me to come back for the full season next year. So next year I made my own little trek up here by myself. My mom didn't come with me. So I got here and had some of the guys that I had from the year before on the team, so I had some friends around. And I got to meet a couple of my new teammates that I was going to play with at Tech. Got here, and at first, I didn't know what I was going to do because I wasn't used to being in the hills and the woods and all the windy roads and all that, but it kind of grew on me a little bit. I like being outdoors, so on off days, I get to go see all kinds of bodies of water and just look at mountains and stuff like that, just stuff that I don't get to see at home. It's been good for me because I'm getting to explore the world and all that just from baseball, so it's been a blessing to say the least.
Had you ever been to Vermont or New England before?
I've been to Virginia, and that was the furthest that I've been.
Oh, wow.
And then that was like my halfway mark. Like I stopped in Salem, Virginia, and then I woke up the next morning and looked at the GPS, and I was like, I'm only halfway. It was the furthest I've ever been.
How would you compare Vermont to home?
It's a lot. I mean, it doesn't seem as big, but it's bigger than what you think it is. Kind of like back home, which I graduated with 96 in high school, and there wasn't very many people in my hometown. But I mean, I feel like it's more spread out. Like houses aren't as close as they are back home, and back home it's a lot of flatlands. It's not really, we don't see mountains. Like we see a hill and we think it's a mountain, but here you see real mountains.
And for the record, where is home for you?
Seminary, Mississippi.
Okay, which is where?
You know where Hattiesburg
is? I certainly
do,
yes.
All right, so I'm 20 minutes north of Hattiesburg.
Okay, yeah.
And we got one street light, so like, if you're on your way to Jackson from Hattiesburg, you're going to pass right through Seminary and not even know.
Okay, I think I have, as a matter of fact.
Yeah, you probably have.
Now, you mentioned you got to see a lot of bodies of water when you were playing here. Have you been to Boston Lot Lake?
Yeah, I went on our first off day, and I'm probably not going back.
What?
Because that walk, I wasn't prepared
okay,
for that.
Okay, to be fair, Phoebe and I went there yesterday, and they're like, yeah, just walk up. It's right there. We're 15 minutes in, not seeing any water, and then
exactly.
We have to walk all the way around.
Straight incline, too. I had on slides. I didn't have on tennis shoes, so I was walking, and then, like, I'm walking and looking, and I just see straight uphill. And I'm like,
yeah.
All right, like, when we get to the top of this hill, that'll be it, and it'll just flatten out. Went up
again. On top of that, also after the rain, all mud. And I was in my Birks and like slipping and sliding everywhere.
And the walk down was even kind of tough because like you got to stop yourself.
Yeah.
It's almost like it makes you run down.
You got to be very careful.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Flatlanders.
Not going back there.
Very much.
Hey, I'm not from Flatland. I'm from here, Greg.
Okay,
you know
fair enough. Go a little bit further south in Peterborough, you will be, so okay.
Close okay.
And I guess that's why everybody here is in shape, because, I mean, I do all that hiking and walking and stuff. And
yeah. I mean, when all you have to do, like, in the winter is ski, you got to get outdoors and be active, really.
You got to do something or you'll go crazy.
That is true.
I've never been skiing before. I don't think I know anybody that's been skiing.
I want to see a Darius on skis.
I
want
to see any of these guys on skis.
I don't pull off a snowboard.
I don't mean the water variety either. I mean the honest-to-God snow skis.
There's still snow up on top of Killington.
I think
right
there
now?
Is, yeah.
I think they were open up until a couple weeks ago,
yeah,
so there might be a little bit.
Traditionally, Killington has always tried to be open on June 1st for the serious, hardcore people. I saw a video yesterday, though. They're already in the process of rebuilding all the ski lift towers on the Superstar Trail, which is the trail they use for June 1st skiing. So once June 2nd rolls around, construction season arrives. Not unlike, you know, any place up north. It's 10 months of winter and 2 months of road construction, basically. Probably
right.
The same Minnesota.
We've passed a lot of road construction on our way to Maxfield.
But it's better than last year.
That is true.
Yeah.
If you had been here last year, the entirety of Route 5 was ripped up to the ground, and it was dusty and bumpy and slow. And you would sit at the traffic light or the flagger for 10 minutes easily. So if you were running late for the bus, you were in trouble.
Oh, yeah, you were going to miss it. Last summer, I was up in Bethesda, and I would have like a 30-minute commute that would turn into an hour because of traffic. Mm-hmm. Like, now I'm commuting 40 minutes to the field, but it doesn't feel bad because it's not hitting traffic.
You're always moving.
Yeah. So I'm like, this is so doable. Whereas last year I was getting stuck so bad. I have to leave like an hour and a half early for away games just to try and make it on time.
Just don't hit wildlife, no matter what you do. Do not hit
wildlife.
My gosh. Then you have a problem.
I told you, those beware of moose signs really threw me. I wasn't expecting that. But Adairs, I want to talk about the transition from being a former player on the Nighthawks to now being a coach. What has that transition been like for you with Matt Paws and the rest of the coaching staff?
I mean, the transition hasn't been bad, but it's kind of different for me because I'm used to just leading by example, not really saying too much. But now it's kind of like I got to say stuff. So I'm still kind of working out of my shell a little bit, getting to where whatever I say, these guys are going to listen to me, you know. But definitely miss playing, but being a part of a team still, like, makes me feel good about myself, you know. Like, we had a coach this year come in at Tech, and he was saying how he went to get into business for a year, and then he realized, like, it's like every man for himself at that point, and he said he missed being a part of a team, so that's something that I'm glad that I haven't had to go through yet. But coaching, I think, is going to be the thing for me. My mom's a basketball coach, so it's kind of just like the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree type thing.
Is this something that you've always wanted to try, coaching of any sport or at any level?
I mean, the plan was always to play baseball. Really didn't know what I was going to do after. And then everybody just kind of got in my ear. It was like, you need to be a coach. And even my head coach in college said that I would make a great coach. So it was kind of a – I feel like that's kind of my calling type thing, which I'm enjoying. It doesn't feel like a job. So, I mean, it's fun.
Tell me a little bit about what your coaching relationship was at Louisiana Tech this past year. Was it like a grad assistant kind of thing?
Yeah, I was a grad assistant in the fall, and then classes got to be a little too expensive, so I just told Coach when I went home for Christmas, I was like, I still want to do it, but I don't want to take classes. And he was like, that's fine. I was like, so it's still cool if I come back, because I was already paying rent on the house and stuff like that. He was like, yeah, well, like, we still love to have you around, just you don't have to take classes. We'll just get you set up with some lessons and stuff, which I was already doing to make money and do camps and stuff like that. But I was pretty much just working with the outfielders and feeding the machine for BP, and late nights, if guys wanted to go hit, I would go up there and feed the machine, and I would even hit with them. So that was a fun part for me.
Now, you said mom was a coach?
She's a coach right now. Yeah, she basketball.
At what level?
High school
level. Has there been any lesson that she's been able to impart upon you that serves as a basis for what you do as a coach?
Pretty much how she raised me, I guess. It's never been a woe is me type thing. Like, if I wasn't, like, the first 3-4 years at Tech, I wasn't really playing every day, and I wanted to leave. But she told me, like, what's the point of leaving? Like, if you leave and go somewhere else, you can end up in the same boat, and you've already kind of built a resume there. So, like, you're getting chances. You just got to capitalize on the chances. So it's she raised me tough, so it wasn't really – I don't really feel sympathy for many people. Like, if you're going through some rough stuff, then, like, just so be it. I mean, it's not like the end of the world. I mean, you'll get through it. And at the end of the day, if you just complain about it, nobody really cares anyway.
So you're like a tough love type of coach.
Yeah.
Tell me about working with people from an authority figure standpoint who are not that much younger than you are. Is that a challenge?
See, that's the part that's tough. See, like, they might think, I'm 25, they're 21, some of them maybe 22, 23. They're like, this guy's not that much older than me, but I've been through everything that you've been through or you're going to go through. Like, pretty much any situation in the game of baseball up to the college level I've been through. Like, red shirt, sitting the bench, coming off the bench, starting, getting benched for not playing well, getting back in there, and then, like, and then the success part of it as well, too. So, I mean, pretty much know how to help a guy mentally through anything. And I feel like that's what's most important, because, you know, they say the game is like 80, 90% mental and then the rest is physical. So, like, if you feel like you're the best every time you step out on the field, then your play will show that. Mm-hmm. But once you start scuffling it, and you can just read the body language, like when a guy's struggling and he's not feeling it, his swings might not look the same. He might not look as sure in the field, and that's when you just got to pull the guy to the side and tell him, like, you're good enough. Like, you just need to act like it and know it.
Now, Noah, you had a similar experience. Played college ball and then transitioned into coaching at Dartmouth. What was that transition like for you, going from player to coach to now being on the business side?
Yeah, similar to what Adairs is saying, like, it's hard to hang it up. You know, I think all of us harbor desires to play professionally. He had a much better career than I did and more of an opportunity to potentially play professionally. I knew pretty early on, like, I would love to keep playing, but you know, I'm just an average college baseball player, and as a right-handed pitcher throwing 88 miles an hour, you're a dime a dozen. So I knew, I was savvy enough to know, you're not going to play professionally, what's option two? And having had some good coaches and seeing their impact, and having had some terrible coaches and seeing really the deleterious impact that they can have, I wanted to see, I want to get into coaching to help people be better at baseball, be better at life. And so it was an easy transition from that standpoint. And I think for me, from a personality standpoint, like, I've always been like a 60-year-old man, like even as a 10-year-old. So making the transition to, okay, this guy's a coach now when he used to be our teammate, was easier for me. And I got married in college. So there was always a sense of like, he's a little bit older. And that made it easier. And I think for Adarius, like, the fact that he has such a strong resume, that he's such a hard worker, and that he's been in this situation, like, he carries a weight that will override the age gap for him, to where they immediately sense there's a presence with him. This guy knows what he's talking about. This guy's done it at a high level, that there's immediate buy-in. He doesn't have to sell them on, oh, hey, I'm into this coaching thing now. Like, the minute he says something, they listen. And so when I was thinking about hiring him, it was a no-brainer. I was like, this guy would be fabulous to have coaching our guys, helping them. He understands what it takes to be successful in not only college baseball but summer baseball. And then just his presence and his charisma just made it an easy hire for us.
Now, when you're looking to hire coaches, do you tend to find yourself looking back at previous players?
Absolutely. I mean, anytime I can bring on someone who we already have a relationship, it just makes it easier. Mm-hmm. I don't want to have to train new people every single summer. So we hope to have the continuity of either someone who I have coached, someone who's played for us, understands how we run an organization, how I operate, how I communicate. It just makes life easier. And so if we have someone who understands what's the Upper Valley all about, how do the Nighthawks look at summer ball, and then do I like them? Can we coexist? Do we enjoy spending time together? And are they going to take care of our players? That's what I'm interested in. And so sometimes it's hard because not a lot of our guys are going into coaching, or they've been fortunate enough to get a full-time position, and so they can't coach in the summertime. We've got several who fall into that category. But anytime we've got an alum who wants to pursue coaching, I want to make every opportunity to get them up here.
Is this something that has developed organically over all the years that you've been in the NECBL? Like, for instance, did you have a similar approach at Laconia and have that opportunity there?
Yes, my first manager at Laconia was Matt Williams, who is now headed to Omaha with Coastal Carolina. Matt played for me at Spartanburg Methodist, and he was my first call when I started the Muskrats. And so he managed, and then two of the staffers who were on that first staff then took over, and we just kind of went from there. But I've had a lot of former players, Keller Bradford, a favorite of yours, he coached for us, Mike Koss, who played for us and then coached for us for a couple of years, who's now at Marist. And that's the goal for me, is bringing in people that I know, particularly people that I can trust. Sometimes that we can't find those folks, and we've got to go out and look at resumes and try and make a feel. And of late, I've allowed Matt Paws to really handle his staff a little bit more, just because he's the one who's got to be in the dugout with them. I don't. And so I want him to be comfortable. And if he's okay with the person, then great. But you know, Matt's another one who I've known for a long time, being a local guy. He was on our staff with Jason Sfarski many years ago. And so the transition to, I don't have to reinvent the wheel. I don't have to go through, well, this is how we do things here, and this is what I want to see. That would get tedious. And so it's just easier and simpler to bring on someone who has some institutional knowledge of both me and the organization.
Adarius, what made you want to come back to the Nighthawks in this coaching position?
So we were on the road in Middle Tennessee, and I think it was after game three. And that's when the pitching coach that was here, one of our played, he texted me. I had a text from him right after the game. He was like, are you helping coach at Tech? And I was like, yeah. He was like, I thought that was you that I saw on TV. I guess he was tuned into the game. And I was like, yeah, I'm here, like, kind of just volunteering or whatever. He was like, you know, the Nighthawks are looking for a hitting coach. And I was like, really? He was like, yeah, they're looking to hire one soon. And he told me to text Pause. And I was like, all right. So then I text Pause, and I just said, hey, what's up? This is AD. Like, how you doing? He was like, good and all that. And I was like, I heard y'all were looking for a hitting coach. he was like, yeah, you interested? And I was like, yeah, I don't have anything planned for the summer. Like, I don't know what I'm doing right now. Like, at the end of the day, if I don't have anything, I'm just going to be giving lessons. And then I had, like, this indie ball tryout, and I told him that once I hear back from them, then I'll let you know. And then I ended up not making it. So I just told him, yeah, I'll come do it, and that was the end of it.
It was a very awkward time for me because I wanted him to play professionally, but I was also secretly hoping that he wouldn't get an opportunity to play because I knew he'd be fabulous.
Yeah, I knew that they were looking to do it within the next week. So, like, I told him, all right, I'm gonna text the guy on this date and see what he says. And then I told him, like, I had a job or whatever. He was like, well, we weren't looking to sign anybody until a little later. We just wanted to get eyes on you. We knew that you were local. So if somebody went down, we could come get you. And I was like, all right, well, I'm just going to take the job. So I won't be here.
Were you playing throughout this whole past year?
Nah, I was just after we got finished that 2024 year, I didn't play in the summer.
Okay.
And then I went back to Tech and just started volunteering. Mm-hmm. And I was still, like, just hitting and stuff like that and doing pretty much what the players were doing just on my own time. Mm-hmm. And then once I took this job, I haven't been hitting as much and stuff like that, but I can still do it. Like, if one of the guys want to go up there on their own and do it, then mm-hmm. just to give them a break, then I'll swing a couple times too.
Yeah.
He could roll out of bed and get three hits.
Now, your title is hitting coach. Are you going to be working on base stealing at all or base running at all?
I mean,
given how well you did it here.
It was mostly just Paws telling me when to go. Whenever Paws told me to go, then I was gone. It wasn't really that wasn't me. I could just run and Paws would give me the steal sign and I would take off. I mean, it's kind of just like how you got to play it in summer ball. I mean, that's how you should play it all the time. Mm-hmm. Just make the guy throw you out. Don't be scared to get thrown out.
Was base stealing an element for you at Louisiana Tech?
I mean, we didn't really steal too many bases because we were hitting doubles and homers and stuff like that. But, like, we didn't really run too much. So we would run when we needed to, but it wasn't very often. But mostly for me, the thing is just staying on top of the baseball and backspinning. Like, there's a lot of guys now that want to uppercut swing and try to hit home runs, but that stuff doesn't work.
Especially in our park. I mean, I was over at the field yesterday talking with Paws, and we were just discussing how the ball just does not seem to carry at Maxfield. So being a line drive hitter is probably the best thing to be.
Everywhere, really. Because, I mean, it carries the left field. I know down the line it carries, but everywhere else it kind of seems like a graveyard. But, I mean, if you're just hitting line drives right over the infielder's head, like, nobody's going to be able to catch that one in your own base. And
then the magic happens.
Yeah, and then the next guy comes up and does the same thing. We're first to third, and we're going to score a run like that 9 times out of 10. But we like the home runs, too.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, of course.
Well, I mean, everybody needs to jog a little bit just to build up their endurance.
Yeah. We like to think of home runs as mistakes. Just barely missed it. Whenever we miss one, we hit a home run. When we square it up, it's on the line.
There you go.
Now, Noah, I do want to ask, is there any significance behind the name Nighthawks? What made you choose the Upper Valley Nighthawks?
That's a good question. I mean, one of the things you do is you want to come up with something that's unique. You want to come up with something that's germane to the area. You know, if we were the fire ants, that wouldn't make a great deal of sense. I had in my head the neon color scheme. Mm-hmm. I'd seen that done before. And I thought that was something that would, from a color standpoint, from a marketing and a merchandise standpoint, that would be workable. And so Nighthawk kind of fit. You know, you've got a bird of prey at night. We play at night. They do exist here in this area. And so it kind of all came together as far as what we wanted to do. And, you know, I like how it turned out. And I really like the color scheme that we've been able to utilize. We do a lot with the neon green. I think that pops and that gives us a lot of options from a merchandise and a uniform standpoint. So it's been fun. I've been pleased to see how it's developed.
There was a time, and it hasn't happened lately, that they spray-painted the bases neon green.
Wow.
It's been a while.
We did for a couple of years. Yeah, we were spray-painting the bases.
You just run out of paint, or you catch heat from...
No, we didn't catch any heat for it. No, I think it was just people didn't want to paint the bags. It was more of a laziness thing than anything else.
Was that an every game thing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So did we not have green ones when you were here?
I never
so it was prior to you.
It must have been a couple of years now, yeah. Okay.
Should we bring
them
back?
We might have to bring them back.
Yeah, I think we should.
Maybe. Caitlin, are you volunteering to paint the bags?
I mean, maybe for
the
All-Star game.
I think
that could be
fun.
That
would be a great idea.
I will volunteer for one game, and that's it.
To get out there.
Hey, I'll do the rest.
All right. Perfect. There you go.
There we go.
Add that to your duties.
But when are we going to get to see these neon uniforms? Do you have any idea?
I don't know why we haven't worn them yet. We typically wear them on the road just because when we have back-to-back road days and you've got to wash your uniforms. So we've got a white top, a blue top, and the neon. So I'm actually surprised we haven't worn them yet.
Who makes the call?
I guess it'll be that week. Paul's is usually the one who texts out.
He texts in the group me the uniform for that day.
Okay.
But sometimes the players are like, can we wear the greens today or can we switch it up and – to wear the blue top. They wanted to wear the blue top with the white pants one day, and we lost by like 12. We're never doing that.
Superstitious.
Yeah, baseball players are superstitions. Who'd have thought?
Yes, they are.
Mm-hmm. Who'd have thought?
Interesting. I mean, I wonder if he planned on that third road game, pulling out the neon jerseys.
Probably.
Unfortunately, that one got rained out. Which, speaking of which, we can talk about our first week of the season. It was supposed to be four games, but unfortunately, the last two got rained out. So they haven't had their home opener yet. Going to be tonight. They've had two road games. On Tuesday, they faced the North River Navigators and recorded a 5-0 shutout win. What were your guys' thoughts on that win? What did you like from the team? And, like, did you see any signs of where we could start improving?
The pitchers threw really good that night. They had one hit, which was
not a hit.
don't think it was a hit. I mean, it could have gone either way, but I feel like if we're the home team, they don't get a hit for that.
Mm-hmm.
But they were the home team, so they can pick and choose what they give a hit and what not to give a hit. But hitters, we just, like I told them after the game, I think we just took too many hittable pitches. If we get in there from the beginning of the game and swing at his fastball, put it in play hard a couple times, then the guy's not feeling too good about throwing that fastball across the plate anymore. Then he has to throw secondary stuff. And if we're on time for the heater, then we should be able to hit the breaking stuff. So I would just like to see our guys be aggressive early in the count whenever they get good pitches to hit early in the count. And, I mean, our at-bats were good, though, because we didn't really strike out that many times. So even when we got two strikes, we were fighting, but I would like us to not be in as many two-strike counts.
Mm-hmm. And what has that transition of getting the players used to the wooden bat been like? What advice have you been giving them on timing?
Early is on time. Be ready early, and you don't have to swing as hard as you think you do. Mm-hmm. All you got to do is just be precise with that barrel. Because, I mean, with the aluminum bat, you have a bigger sweet spot, but with the wood bat, you have a smaller sweet spot. So you got to make sure that you catch as much sweet spot as you can. So I try to just tell them don't swing 100%, swing more like 50 to 60% in BP, and then in the game you might ramp it up to 75, maybe 80, but you don't really want to try to swing too hard.
Mm-hmm.
Now, starting off the season with a win, is this indicative, do you think, of where the season's going to go, or are you just still trying to, you know, not get, yeah, not get your hopes up, I guess?
I think we have a very good team on paper. But you never know what that's going to translate to when you're playing. I mean, certainly seeing the way that we dominated North Shore in game one is encouraging.
Mm-hmm.
But also, we were very much shorthanded. We had 10 hitters that day and probably half of our pitching staff. So to see us perform that well and we're still missing a lot of key players is also encouraging. So it'll be good this week as we start to really play, if the weather holds. We really start to play. We've got almost our full team here. And so that's been the part that we've been looking forward to, sort of circled on the calendar midweek of this week. All right, now we have 35, 37 players. What do we look like? And I'm excited to see what that's going to bring.
Now, having some of these guys come in later, is there a little bit of a learning curve there, getting all the guys adjusted to each other? Or are they able kind of to just jump right in?
It happens quickly. You'd think there'd be more of an adjustment period, but the college baseball world is so tight-knit now that a lot of these guys know each other, played against each other, played on an AAU or a travel ball team. So there's a lot of connections that already exist, even though they're not all coming from the same program.
Mm-hmm.
So I think the relational connections gel and happen pretty fast, particularly with some of the bus rides that we take. And then, yeah, there's a bit of an adjustment period for the hitters. Pitchers, I think it's easier to throw against wood. They don't seem to realize that. They keep thinking they're throwing against metal, that you can change change the way you approach hitters when you're pitching to Wood. So there's usually pitching dominates early, and then the hitters start to figure it out a little bit more. And then it becomes about who's got the healthiest people and who's got the most people who actually want to stay here and play baseball. And I think that's what we loved about Adarius, is like he wanted to play baseball. He was here. It's a long summer. It's tiring. It's a grind. But when you love playing, then it makes it fun. You know, the guys who struggle in summer ball are the ones who are constantly looking at the calendar, wanting to go home, the ones who are missing their girlfriend, and they struggle a lot because it's hard to play baseball every single day and to face the quality of competition that we face every single game. It's a challenge.
How was the transition to Wood for you? Had you had a lot of experience with that before you came up here in 22?
Yeah, I pretty much played with Wood every summer from, I want to say like my eighth grade year summer. Well, going into my freshman year of high school, I'm pretty sure that I was hitting with Wood during the summer every
year. But high school was metal, wasn't it?
High school was metal. Yeah. But when we went to play summer ball, like travel ball teams I was playing with and stuff like that, we would swing Wood. So, but, I mean, I always felt like I hit better with Wood for some reason. I don't know. Like, I would go back and couldn't miss a barrel in the fall. And then when the spring rolled around, it seemed like that sweet spot on that bat got smaller. But as soon as I put that Wood back in my hands, it would get back right. I would just try to stay away from Wood during the season.
Out of curiosity, Noah, how is the Wood bat supply issue handled in the Summer College League? Do the kids bring their own? Does the league provide? How does that work?
I wish the league provided. No, they're on their own in the sense of we provide bats to our players, but more and more players are coming in with their own brands, their own models, their own preferences, and, you know, in a financial position that they've purchased them or mom and dad have for them. And so I'm buying fewer than I used to just because they can swing whatever they want. We don't, as a league, have a bat contract or a bat mandate that says you must swing this type of bat or from this company. So players can hit with whatever they want as long as it's not composite. And so you'll see everybody's got different bats. But for those who don't have their own or when they break, we do have bats available. There are boxes and boxes of them upstairs. They actually came late because they were stuck in customs coming out of Canada.
Imagine that.
I kept refreshing the FedEx tracking button. I was like, where are these bats? Where are these bats? Where are these bats? And they finally arrived a couple days late. But they're here.
I've looked into this just a little bit because I discovered, I don't know, a year or two ago that there was a Southern Miss graduate from like 2011, 2012, from Canada, who has his own bat company up in Granby. So it surprises me the number of Canadian bat manufacturers there are.
They've got a lot of timber in Canada.
That is true. That is a good point. And a lot of it is maple, which I think is fairly popular.
Yes.
So how do you get a bat supply? How do you determine where you get that bat supply from, or who manufactures it?
I've changed it year to year. Sometimes it's what are the players like, you know, what have we used in past years that they liked or they didn't like. That informs it a bit. Certainly cost informs it. I mean, we're an organization that can't spend $300 on a Wood bat because some of our hitters, if you guys remember Will Sullivan from a couple of years ago, he would break two bats a game. And so it was, I mean, we were going through dozens and dozens with just him. And so if you're buying $250 bats, that bill is going to be pretty big. So cost has to come into effect, too. So we're trying to find the most cost-effective bat that still is a quality Wood for our players to be able to hit with.
A guy who's going to spend 2 months here is going to go through how many bats on average if he's not named Will Sullivan?
It really depends. I mean, guys who know how to hit, and to Adarius's point, know how to put the barrel on the ball.
I broke like seven, though. and so if he's
breaking seven, someone who is either physically weak or hasn't had a lot of time swinging Wood bat, they might break 15 or more. And sometimes baseball's funny, and you have a game where you break three in one game, and then you go a stretch for like 2 weeks where you don't break any. And so it's just funny how it works out.
Yeah, I think we had a broken bat during that first game.
Oh, we had two.
Oh,
all right.
Yeah. Did we have one in Keene?
Yep.
Yeah. It would be a rarity to not have a bat broken during a game.
Now, I am curious, you're kind of talking a little bit about the financial aspect of it, and then again this year, due to a sponsor, all the games are free for fans at the Upper Valley. Was that kind of a no-brainer to have free admission?
Yes. I mean, that was born out of, we did not play in 2020 because of COVID. And when 2021 rolled around, I really had no idea if we were going to have millions of fans or no fans. Mm-hmm. And so I'm thinking, all right, well, how do we manage this? Is there a way that we can incent people to come? And is there a way that we can have some financial backing to where I'm not concerned if, oh goodness, fans don't show up? And so that was the idea, was born out of, well, what if we do free admission, and what if we get that sponsored? And it was a huge hit. And then we've just been able to continue doing it. Mascoma Bank and the Byrne Foundation have been incredibly generous and supportive for us. And you know, we're the only summer college team in the NECBL that does this, and really across the country that does this, that gives away our admission for free. And what we think is it takes away any barrier for folks to come. And we are very family friendly, and you know, having, I don't have young kids anymore, but when I did, you know, you come to a game and you know, little Johnny or little Susie has a meltdown and you got to leave. It's like, well, I didn't pay anything to get in here. I don't feel badly leaving in the second inning. And so there's a lot of that. And then sometimes, as we've already experienced, the weather's a little dodgy and you're like, well, I'll give it a shot because I'm not going to pay money to do it. And it creates an atmosphere where people can come and go. There isn't a pressure to show up. And that if you are, oh, you know what, it's a beautiful night and our plans just canceled, let's go over to the baseball game. You don't have to think about, well, shoot, I didn't purchase tickets ahead of time, or, oh, my goodness, it costs so much to go. And our goal has always been affordability. And you can't beat free.
Yeah.
And so it's been a way for us to really boost our attendance and create goodwill in the community that they understand this is an organization that cares about them and wants them to be able to come in and enjoy this and make sure that that's possible for everyone across the spectrum.
Right. I feel like every guest we've had on the podcast so far has been talking about the community of the Nighthawks and how powerful that is. Do you think that this is just adding to that community aspect?
Definitely. I mean, the Upper Valley is a special place, and we use that name because it's true. We have fans, host families, sponsors from all these different communities, but it really does act as one. It is a unique place that you've got Vermont and New Hampshire. You've got two states that seems like they're one in this. Like it's right. Almost this extra third state, as it will. Now, no one's ever really been able to define the Upper Valley where it starts and ends. We take the more bigger geographical approach and have fans coming from all over the place. But the community is what makes this special. The community is what supports us. It's what puts the banners up. It's what houses our players, comes and cheers for our guys. We couldn't do it without a supportive community, and we've had that in spades.
I think there's a real challenge when it comes to, I'm no marketing expert, but I think there's a real challenge when you try to take a nebulous geographic area and try to make it a unifying thing. I guess the example that I could cite was when I was in college at Hofstra. I used to spend a lot of broadcasting practice time at professional indoor soccer games. Don't tell anybody, but I would steal the equipment from the radio station, take it with me, use it, practice, bring it back before anybody knew anything about it. But it was something that waned in popularity in Long Island very quickly. They tried a second time to form a team and call it Team Long Island, and Long Island wasn't going to have anything like that. Long Island wants to be part of New York City. And that ultimately failed as well. So to try to build something without an identifiable city, not calling this the White River Junction Nighthawks or the Lebanon Nighthawks, I think there's a challenge in that. So to take something that is in this area where you can have so many different things going on at so many different socioeconomic levels. You got Dartmouth College up here, Ivy League, elite academic institution. You go a couple towns over, you could be out hunting or fishing, a totally different realm of experience. And then to try to take something like the Nighthawks and use it as a unifying force is a challenging thing. But what I'm finding from the outside looking in is that it works, that people identify with a baseball team around an entire geographic area that doesn't show up on a map. And it unifies in a way that most things don't around here. God bless Dartmouth for being here. It's exciting to see when people show up for Dartmouth athletic events. But I don't think it's necessarily something that a person in Windsor or Woodstock is going to say, let's go to a Dartmouth basketball game tonight. Those same people, I think you can get to a baseball game because of what it is. Because of the time of the year, I think also works in its favor. And I think it can unify an area like this in a way that a lot of other things can't.
Well, speaking of the community, tonight's their first opportunity to see the 2025 Nighthawks. What are you guys looking forward to about this home opener?
A win. That's what I'm always looking forward to.
Good answer. Win.
But yeah, seeing all the people come out. Pretty sure they'll have the Max Maple truck out there.
Yes,
pretty
they will.
Oh my gosh, you guys are speaking our language. Phoebe and I are actually starting a food review of all the places in the NACBL, sparked by everyone talking about Maple Creamies. So we're going to be trying them tonight, so stay tuned, guys. We're very excited.
I got popcorn, too.
Yeah,
okay.
That is good.
I guess we should ask you guys then, like, anything besides Maple Creamies that Maxfield is known for?
No, they got like a steak burrito or something like that. I don't know. I have one.
Unfortunately, the box is not back this summer. So that was our burrito taco truck from the past few years. They will not be here. I keep prodding them to try and come back. You know, it's a special place to watch a game, and we've got a lot of great people who are associated with what we're doing. And Max, I'm not one to throw out superlatives all that often, but it is the best maple creamy you will have.
Okay.
And there are people who will come and come to our ticket guy and go, I'm just here for ice cream. I get it. I'm not mad at you for just pulling in to get an ice cream cone.
Another benefit of free
out.
Admission, I guess. Mm-hmm. Just get your maple creamy and go.
Just come for the ice cream and leave. And, you know, maybe they'll stick around for an inning or two. Mm-hmm. But I can't blame them. It's that good. It's been hyped up, but it is properly hyped.
And get the maple candies on top of it.
Okay.
Absolutely have to.
Yeah, Phoebe and I actually went to Silloway Maple,
yes.
And they had creamies there, but I don't know. Maybe the Maxfield ones will blow us out of the water.
We have a basis so that we can compare. We can let you all know if it's the best maple creamy in Vermont.
Do a maple creamy review of everywhere.
Maybe it's good that we tried one before so that then we're not disappointed.
Yeah. They don't do that up at Montpelier, do they?
I don't believe
I don't
so.
Think so.
The interesting for us is we play in Vermont, but Max is actually in New Hampshire. So I don't know, is it a New Hampshire maple creamy or is it a Vermont?
It's an Upper Valley maple creamy.
Exactly.
Yeah, Upper Valley. Yeah.
Yes. We're building that nebulous brand here.
Yeah.
Another thing I'm looking forward to is the walk-up songs, though.
I'm so excited.
Okay. Because we are thinking today, because Phoebe and I are actually managing the TikTok this summer, we're thinking of doing a TikTok with all the guys asking about their walk-up songs and why they picked them.
Because
it'll be interesting.
I remember the team I worked for last summer, there was one guy, his walk-up song was L.A. Love by Fergie. Interesting choice, but it was really nice to hear just every game. That's a good song. So I'm excited to see just kind of the range of walk-up songs. I feel like, especially with these guys coming from all over the country, you're going to hear a range of different music tastes. But I hope they all got theirs submitted in so that we can hear them all tonight.
I've seen them. I'm disappointed Cole Fellows has switched. He had California Dreaming by the Mamas and Papas last year because he's a California kid. Makes sense. He's switched it up this year.
Do you know what it is?
I forget. I looked at it, but now I'm not remembering. I was just bummed that it wasn't California Dreamin' anymore.
Now, who's actually in charge? Are you doing the walk-up songs?
No, I wish I would because it would all be entirely made of hardcore punk. and nobody would be able to understand it, and they'd wonder why I was so angry. Two words for you. Ronald Evans.
Ronald Evans had an excellent walk-up song. For him.
Yes.
For him. I can't say that
what
I loved
what was it called again?
The music. Oh, what was that
Pretty
song?
Boy Swag, was that what
yeah,
it was
Pretty Boy Swag. That's right.
And it just got a whole bunch of comments in the press box about how daring it was to... I don't know the lyrics to it, but the...
Are there lyrics to it?
Could be. I don't know.
I don't know if we want to talk about the
I think I might have been part of it, but I still liked it. It was still pretty cool.
The walk-up songs are great. I'm glad AD mentioned that. It's just fun to see a bit of the player's personality come out, and you look at it, some of them and you go, oh, that fits, and then there are others like, what? He chose this song? And it's always curious and always fun to be able to have that. And they've gotten far more specific. We get a lot of requests of, like, start the song at 2 minutes and 7 seconds.
I guess that makes sense. You have a favorite lyric or something. Do you guys, what were your walk-up songs?
Mine was Feeling Peachy by Kodak Black.
Okay.
It's
And you stuck with that the whole time through? Or did you switch it up at all?
I had it whenever I came here for the 10 games, and then I used it the whole next season, and then I used it in summer ball again, and then I used it all of my last season, too. Wow. Treated me well, so I went switching up on it.
It's lucky.
Yeah.
I'm old enough that we just didn't have that. The technology wasn't really there.
Walk-up songs are a newer thing.
I mean, at least certainly they had those probably at the major league level where they had PA systems, but playing at UMass, like we did not have that technology. I think we had a tape deck that we had a batting practice mix on, but that was the extent of it.
What's been the best walk-up song you guys have heard so far? And this can also be like from your college experience at Darius Lee.
I'm not gonna lie, Russo at Southern Miss, he had These Words.
Ooh.
I don't know the name. I don't know who sings
isn't it
song.
Natasha?
That was a good song.
That's a good
song. That was catchy. Like every time he came to the plate, it was had me going.
Russo lived with you.
Yes, he did. I was not aware of the fact that he had a specific song like that because I probably wasn't paying attention too well. But it was funny. Yesterday, I was reading on some Southern Miss Facebook page and came across a graphic of all of the Southern Miss players' walk-up songs from this past season, and I had to look up the guys I knew. And the one that struck me as the most appropriate was actually Nick Monastere, a song called Here Comes the Money.
Mm. Yeah, that one was nice, too.
Come next month, the money's going to come.
Yeah, the money's there.
Mm-hmm. I hope so.
That's a good idea. Maybe we should do a graphic, too, for our socials.
Exactly. Then
that'd be a great idea. Yeah. Look back at all. It changes. There are years where it's heavy country, mm-hmm. and then there are years where it's been a little more heavy on the sort of R&B and rap. We seem to not have as many players with traditional rock walk-up songs, much to the chagrin of Greg and myself and Ray in the booth. We would be in trouble as an organization if the three of us got a hold of the radio. It would be a lot of punk music and a lot of 80s music. I think our fans might not be as pleased, but we would love
some
it.
Of us. Yeah. Come on. Some of us never got out
of
that.
Oh, my gosh.
This is the greatest shirt I've ever seen.
Some of us never got out of that decade.
I still haven't. You know, I'm an 80s kid. I grew up on MTV. This is why we have the seventh inning safety dance. Mm-hmm. And Greg, to those of you at home, on the audio portion of this, he is wearing a Men Without Hats mm-hmm. t-shirt, which is classic. And Greg has a great collection of 80s t-shirts. He's got Bad Brains. He's got the Ramones. A lot of good stuff.
Yeah, speaking of which, I have never heard a walk-up song I like because nobody's ever chosen the Ramones as a walk-up song.
Well, you've got to like bribe one of your host kids into doing it.
Well, I did. I tried that once. I think I might have even tried it with Brian Bowman or Eddie Modica in summer of 18, I think it was. But they didn't take me up on it. And Modica should have because he's from New York City, for God's sake. Mm.
Right. Fits. Yeah.
Have you guys ever experienced like a player not submitting a walk-up song and then you have to choose something for them?
Only in a not submitting it because they haven't done it in a timely fashion. Not that like, I don't care. That's always a dangerous proposition.
When
there's a blank, we're like,
that's when you guys get your 80s.
We can give him whatever we want. We usually don't go 80s. We usually go something embarrassing.
Okay. Like Barbie Girl. Like,
yeah, exactly. Baby Shark.
Baby Shark. That's awesome. I would love to hear that.
You'll always watch because they'll sort of look up at the press box and like
wait, I swear
song?
I submitted a song.
Like, not what
it comes out of, it comes as a warning that people are above you two floors and are looking down at you, mm-hmm. that you need to do your job and give us the information.
Right. The second the game is over, that can you give me a walk-up song, please, so I don't have to hear Baby Shark again?
Every time I walk up. Well, all right, so we talked about tonight's game, home opener. Darius, you said you're looking for a win. What do you think needs to happen tonight to ensure that win?
It's pretty simple. You hit the ball hard, you score runs, throw strikes, make plays, and you score more runs than the other team.
Yeah. Do you have any insight on the Sanford Mainers that were playing tonight?
They oddly haven't played much.
Yeah, first
they
game
played
was
their
yesterday.
First game last night against Vermont. I believe they lost.
Yes.
Sanford has traditionally been pretty good. I mean, they have a great organization within our league, and we've always had a good matchup with them. I don't know if they're understaffed at this point. I'm sure they're a little bit rusty, having been sitting around and not played as much. We're a bit in that boat, too, having had a couple of days off. So it should be interesting tonight. But what's weird and quirky about our schedule is we play them at home tonight, Monday, and then they come to us on Saturday, and then we go to them on Sunday as a makeup game, and then we go right back there on Monday. So we're going to play Sanford four times in the span of a week, which is a little bit strange. So I think it would be good for us to kind of bury them in the North standings if we can get a bunch of wins in this first week.
That would be nice. It'll be an interesting little weekend series next weekend.
Has the scheduling changed much now that we're back to a two-division alignment?
Not a ton. We play the Southern teams once on the road and once at home. Okay. And then everybody else, I think we play six times, 3-3.
We should bring up the conversation of the Governor's Cup. We should not forget that.
How could you forget that?
Because the kids actually get into it, which is the interesting thing.
They do. I really love that we've kind of prioritized our rivalry with the Vermont Mountaineers. They have retained the Governor's Cup for the past 2 years, and that is quite frustrating. We've been very close both those years. I feel like we gave it away. So this is the year we take it back. Right, Adarius?
Right. I heard last year it was like a six-game set. We took the first three and then dropped the next three.
Yes.
I mean, guys would ask me, what
thank
the
you for reminding me.
How do you tie break a six-game series?
You can't. You just got to win four.
And
just win four.
But they still had. I mean, even when it was decided, the last game of the season was up in Montpelier. You could tell that from both sides that it meant something. Our guys got an 11-0 win, which kind of made a nice, you know, capped off a nice seat, you know. Nice way to end a rough season, and the guys from Vermont all posed with the trophy afterward. So for a bunch of people who are not from here to grasp a rivalry in that fashion, it's kind of fun.
Yeah, it adds a little bit of extra juice to the games that we play, and it's fun. It's all good-natured, and you know, but there's just a little bit extra energy when it's a cup game.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right, well, we're all looking forward to the home opener tonight. But I think that's going to conclude Season 3, Episode 11 of the Hawks Talk Podcast, Week 1 Review. I want to give a huge thank you to Noah Crane and Adarius Myers for joining us today. Thank you to everyone for tuning into this episode. Caitlin, Greg, and I have a lot of excitement planned for the podcast this season. I want to thank Caitlin Beal and Greg Fennell for joining me on the podcast. I'm Phoebe Winters, and this has been the Hawks Talk Podcast.